Hello and welcome to another episode of Diabetes Dialogue, Technology, Therapeutics, and Real World Perspectives. I am Diana Isaacs, joined with my co-host, Natalie Bellini. And this episode is very special because Natalie and I both just returned yesterday from the ATTD conference in Barcelona, Spain. It was an incredible week. Barcelona is certainly a great location for a conference, but the learning was incredible. Each year, I don't know how they can top what they did the year before, and they always do. So we are going to go through some of our key highlights, and there'll probably be more, but we're going to just get started today. There was so much. And beginning with the opening session, actually. So in the opening session, their keynote was Professor Boris Kabachev, who's actually from the University of Virginia. Really nice talk about AI and diabetes, which of course is exploding. But one of the things that he focused on was digital twins, which is a very interesting concept to essentially use all of this different data, like insulin taking data, glucose data, but also additional data like stress and exercise and sleep, whatever data we can get. And it's almost like you can make an AI copy of yourself to then be able to try different changes. Like, for example, in the study he talked about was with AID, how you could use this model to basically try different things like, oh, well, what would happen if we increase the basal rates, right? And in doing that, people were actually able to improve their time in range in this randomized control trial that he did. One of the things that I found interesting was that I guess there were two components of it. One was just providing people the information versus the other of actually being able to use this digital twin and see what would happen. And the digital twin technology improved time in range versus just having the biofeedback of, oh, well, these types of foods increase your glucose more. That alone didn't improve time in range. So, Natalie, what do you think about all of this?
So I think it's really interesting. You know, we practice and we see patients and we say, you know, we need to change your sensitivity. And the first thing, you know, to drive your numbers down or up or whatever we're doing, right? And what happens is people that are either afraid to make changes or afraid of hypoglycemia go, and then they don't always do it, right? I think that when you add this digital twinning, it gives someone a little bit of practice to say, well, if we did this, this would happen. If you do this, this will happen without actually doing it. So they're not going home and taking that ownership of that change and not being able to look me in the eye and go, Natalie, there's no way I'm going to do this. I'm going to walk out of your office. I'm going to make these changes back again because you're terrifying me right now. Because they want to do, people want to please you, right? So I love the idea of being able to manipulate and say, well, if we did this, this might happen. And if we do this, this might happen. And give the person the power, even maybe to make decisions in between. So I would like to change your sensitivity from 30 to 35 or from 30 to 25. And the person's just a little bit, but we give it to the digital twin, let the patient manipulate, that person with diabetes manipulate a little bit and go, I'm willing to do 32 for now because I see what the outcome is going to be. Boy, have I made a difference and so have they. We're moving in the right direction. So yeah, this is amazing and I'm super excited about it and I can't wait until we could incorporate exercise, diet, all of it together, right? Let's try and change one thing at a time. Let the digital twin go sit in the play box with that and then let's make those decisions together. Oh, it's like a relief. I can't wait.
Yeah, I think it's really, it's definitely incredible. And I see how this would improve time in range. Like if you can practice and kind of see this is, oh, if I change the correction factor by 10% versus 20%, like how is that going to impact things? And then, of course, the next step is all this will be automatic or this will be embedded within algorithms. The only thing is, I think there still is very human component that I don't know. I think it's going to be tricky. I'm not saying it's impossible, but I think that the AI, there's just certain, you can learn a lot. There's a lot of info you can gather, but there are still some unpredictable pieces of human behavior. And this was a topic that was actually embedded in a lot of the sessions throughout the conference that, yes, we're getting closer to fully closing the loop. There's a lot of trials that are really not bolusing and getting decent time in range. But as Rehan Lal said, there's a difference between a fully closed loop and a kind of an insulin pump or an AID system where you're just not making meal boluses, right? Like a fully closed loop, an artificial pancreas, like you, it would account for all these variables and you wouldn't go low. It would be able to handle exercise, unpredictable exercise versus this. I think there's still, it's like if you just ate a meal and had a lot of insulin with it, and then you decide to do this intense exercise, you're going to have a lot of insulin on board and you can't take away that insulin, right? So there's still, you know, this isn't going to cure everything, but it's really exciting where this is all going.
That's really good, right? This is the first step. It's certainly not the last step, right? I think right now we can use, you know, a digital twin to help someone make decisions that they're already hesitant on, because this person, you know, it spends 99.9% of their time away from us. The person sitting in front of us, when we make those changes, we do the best we can trying to look at the social determinants of health, their career, their, you know, their interpersonal relationships, their ability to exercise, their access to food, all these things. And we're trying to help them make decisions and recommendations based on everything that we know. And we can't know everything. So is the digital twinning going to help? Yes. Are we far from an artificial pancreas where I would put an infusion set in every third day and not think about it ever again? We're far from that, right? Yeah. We are.
Because or even every 7 days, or even implantable.
Right, or an implantable, right? But it's also like, okay, I just said I'm going to eat all this food, and then my neighbor comes over and says, I sprung a leak in my whatever, can you run over and help me? Yeah, until I get low, right? Like, or the food we got was not great, or like, you and I sat in restaurants for the last week. How many times was food delayed? How many times was it different than we thought it would be? More carb, less carb? You know, people with diabetes are kind of saying, hey, we're going to need more rapid acting insulin. We're going to need, like, there's all kinds of parts and pieces that will make it not fully closed loop for a while. But boy, does it feel better and better every time we stop as a group and come to something like ATTD is one of my favorite conferences. It's intimate. It's, you can talk to everyone. It's wonderful to stop and truly focus on the technology at hand.
Yeah. So speaking of that, let's talk about some of the data that was presented. So Sequel MedTech had a big product theater. They also had a huge booth at the exhibit hall, but they had a really nice product theater where they shared some of their real world data. And that's very exciting because it really just became available for us last July. And they recently announced like their full launch now, but you know, it was more limited at first. So really interesting. So for starters, in their product theater, they shared real-world data of the first 274 people that used the system. Their mean time in range was 77% and time below range 2.9%. And then Dr. LaFell, so Lori LaFell was one of the speakers, along with Joanna Mitri and Leo Wilson. And she, Dr. LaFell actually presented data from the T1D exchange about occlusions. And one of the things about this pump, in addition to just using the Tidepool loop algorithm, which came from the whole DIY looping movement, so it has a really nice story there, but also the pump itself is supposed to be much better at detecting occlusions. And so they reported data just showcasing that a lot of people have unexpected hyperglycemia when they would ask, and they'd say like, was this related to unplanned food or additional carbohydrates or, you know, any potential causes? Nearly half, 49% said that they have at least one explained hyperglycemic event without obvious food or infusion set dislodgement. And a lot of them saying they had unexplained hyperglycemia, even glucose readings over 300, over 400, and only 3% of cases had an occlusion alarm. So it definitely, it kind of asks the question of, are there more occlusions that we don't realize? Depending on the pump technology, other pumps may take a lot longer to recognize an occlusion and to alert the person about it. So anyway, it's compelling data to say maybe this is a bigger problem than we realize, but kind of stay tuned on that. And then now, did you think?
I think that that's a you know, it's like, okay, we all know that when you eat double chocolate cake and forget to bolus for it, you're going to be 300 or 400 if you have type 1 diabetes, and their insulin pump is approved for type 1. So we'll narrow the conversation down, right? So you don't bolus enough. You go and eat out and it's rice and there's some sort of sweet sauce on it. And then whatever that you're going to, and you miss even by a little bit because of the concentrated amount of carbohydrates you're eating, you will have very high glucose pretty quickly, right? I have no idea where this came from. I was high, I didn't know why, and there was no pump alarm. And this data is about that, right? Very specifically, it says, and they're questioning that, were there occlusions? You know, some of the pumps on the market take 2 and 3 and 4 units of pressure to recognize an occlusion, where this twist pump has a different way of sensing occlusions that we're, you know, not going to get into just for reasons of time, but it's very sensitive to occlusion. So their point, I think, was just that, right? I also think we should talk about that, you know, people have distress about this. You know, they call it psychological distress, but this is diabetes distress. It's like, look, I've done everything right, you guys. I got exercise today. I ate my broccoli. I did everything I'm supposed to do, and I'm still 300, and that's not fair. And this is where diabetes burden plays a role, right? So the idea that this, you know, 73% said this is reported emotional distress. And then 70% said that they had physical symptoms at the time. So this is not just, okay, you're 300, you know, go change everything out. You have no idea why, or 400 even, right? I mean, 21% said above 400. This is more than that, right? This is just like, I do everything right and I still can't get it right. And how do we take that away? So I think it's interesting.
Yeah. And I think like we have to take it with a grain of salt, because it's not saying like all of these definitely were occlusions, but honestly, if even 10% of those cases were occlusions, like, and a pump can address that by detecting it earlier, like that would be a big deal. So
it would be a big deal. And would it keep someone out of DKA ultimately, right? As you're approaching that 400 number with a lack of insulin, with whatever else is happening in that person's world, and maybe they're not paying attention and maybe their sensor's off for whatever, right? Like this could be a big deal. Could we avoid, you know, DKA is ultimately the goal, isn't it? Always.
For sure. And then kind of continuing on. So Dr. Mitri went through the data and went into a little bit more detail on it. So that mean time in range was 76%. But then they also broke it down with the percentage of people that met the time in range over 70%, which was 78% of people, and 89% met the time in range less than 54 of less than 1%. And then they further broke it down with targets. So this system, we can set a target glucose range. It can go as low as 87. So they show that people that had that midpoint was less than 100 versus over 100. And those where it was less than 100 actually had more time in range. They were 82% versus those with the higher midpoint were 75%. Now, one thing I do want to point out is that time below range in that midpoint of less than 100 was 5.1%. So that is exceeding that less than 4%. And that's compared to 2.5% with when it had that higher than 100.
Yeah. So there's a couple of things I want to comment on. First of all, this was, you know, some of the first twist users. Those people are all educated. They're all online. They all knew this was coming. They've been waiting for months, right? So we're looking at a pretty specific group of people, number one.
And many were probably employees also.
And many may very well have been employees, although we don't know if they pulled these out or not, right? But the first 274 people tend to be people who are waiting for this, right? So that's number one. So we need to keep everything with a grain of salt and look at more later, right? The more time in range, they looked at bolus frequency, less than 3 times a day, 3 to 4 times a day, greater than 4 times a day, right? So the more you bolus, the better we're going to, you know, that time and range increases, right? So number one, number two, right? And then what else do we want to think about, right? Are these settings optimized right away or not? Because this is the twist loop algorithm. But so with people with type 1, which is where this is FDA approved, We have yet to get someone approved with type 2 diabetes at this time. Just as a general, I don't know if you have or not yet.
Oh, we have. Yeah,
we have not, right? So I don't know how much we're working on it, though, either. So, but anyway, so this first group probably was mostly type 1s, and you're going to have more time below range, especially when people aren't used to this algorithm yet. So it may be that, that you're getting a little bit more hypoglycemia because of that. I don't know. And then thirdly, remember what this targets, the midpoint. You said it, and like, let's just take one step back and talk about that. So if I set the target of 100 to 120, it's going to target 110, right? So that is the midpoint. So the discussion is, if we set it less than 100, we're going to increase that time in range, but also increase that time below range. That makes sense, because 100 is closer to 50, right? Or 70 even, right? Then 110 or 120 is as a midpoint. So it's not unexpected, but I think we're going to learn a lot about this and about where to set people's starting doses to try and reduce that time below range. They just looked at the data. They didn't make changes. This is just looking backwards at the data of the first 274 people.
Dr. LaFell made a really good point also during the product feeder that we don't know what their starting time below range was. Like, they could have come from 10% time below range. Right. So maybe they're going in the right direction, right? So it'll definitely help to see more data. But it's a good reminder that when you do, generally with any pump system, when you lower that target glucose target or range, you may risk having more hypoglycemia at the benefit of having more time in range.
Well, and then interesting, in a later presentation, Dr. Mitri presented an expanded analysis of 2,000 Twist users. So now we're looking at more people, right? Mm-hmm. And guess what? The time and range, that cohort was still 74%, not quite as high as that first 274 people, but still impressive, right? Hitting that. And these are everyone that they looked at everyone, 1,946 people. They looked at the midpoint glucose target again, though, because I think this is where this part of the magic in this is, let's target the right numbers, right? Those with a midpoint less than 100 achieved time and range of 83%, 83% out of almost 2,000 people, compared with those of a higher target, which was 72%. So I think that, again, we really need to keep that in mind. If someone is coming in with a very high A1C, we might do that more slowly. But ultimately, where we're going to get the biggest bang for our buck is to keep that target below 100. And then mean time in hypoglycemia with those more than 1,900 people was 5.3% in the lower target, 2.1% in the higher target. So do we change the sensitivity a little bit? How do we make it, how do we make this dance while reducing that hypoglycemia overall is going to end up being the big question.
Right. And hopefully we'll see kind of further analyses of that. Maybe they could split it up and look at people that had less time below range and see, were some of their settings different? Like, maybe their max basal was different, or their correction factor, like kind of looking at some of those things. But it's exciting to see that so far and to see such great time and range. As long as we're on this topic, I think the other exciting thing that's recently happened is that the Eversense integration. So, of course, probably almost all, or if not all, of this data is with Libre 3 Plus, because that's been the first sensor partner with Twist. But now also Eversense integrates, and Francine Kaufman actually presented some of the preliminary data with the Twist. And so this is like really new, hot off the press. This was actually like from February through March of this year, and 122 sensors. And interestingly, 64% were T1D. So I guess they had more type 2 in their study, yeah. Right? But they showed that the average time in range was 76.6%. They also looked at time in tight range, 70 to 140, which was almost 54%. And then in their study, it looks like the time below range was just over 3% and only 0.5% below that 54. So, I mean, this is like early data, but it's pretty neat to see that. And hopefully as they get more people, they can start doing those analyses as well with the differences in the glucose target range and all of that.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited about that. I mean, we talked a little bit when 365 was officially launched. of the benefits, right? People that say my first day is wonky and they're in their, you know, replaceable every 15 day or 10 day sensor. I have these challenges. I get pressure lows overnight. Some of the things that people truly have, or they have tape allergies, all those challenges go away with an implantable sensor, right? So it'll be interesting. I know I've had people who are using Twist or who are interested in Twist say point blank, I want Twist because I want Eversense. And we're seeing more people requesting Eversense than ever before.
Yeah. So I look forward to kind of seeing how the data shapes out. And kind of similar to this topic is the question of, does the sensor that you wear with an AID system impact the time in range? And so turning a little bit to Medtronic, which is now officially MiniMed, so we'll call it MiniMed, we'll try to remember to do that moving forward. They, you know, sometimes they get the feedback that, well, you have the Guardian 4 sensor, and we know that isn't as accurate, and that may run lower. And so, of course, your study shows
higher, so it looks like it's, yes, all of it. We've heard it all.
Right. Right. So they tackled that head on, and they did a number of studies comparing the Guardian 4 to their newer sensor options, the Simplera, and now the Instinct made by Abbott, to show that really there isn't a change. Like, you're still seeing those same time in range with the 780G using those sensors. But specifically, they presented three studies that compared Simplera Sync and Instinct. And this was presented, they had a big product theater, I think it was on Thursday, so it was like on the second day of the conference, showcasing that it really delivered strong time and range results across all the sensors. So it showed non-inferiority in time and range, with 79.1% time and range seen with the Instinct versus 80.6 with Simplera Sync. So very similar.
So, and realize that each person got both sensors. So I think this is really important, because the challenge with people with diabetes is what? They're all different, aren't they? Every single person walking in my office has a different story, a different diet, a different exercise plan, a different, right? Like, they have different lives. And so when you put something on one person and put it on another person, you're going to get two different things, aren't you? But when you do 6 weeks of one and then switch it and give them 6 weeks of the other, right? So they got either Instinct for 6 weeks or Simplera 6 weeks, and then flip them. So every person got both. And I think this is where the data danced in my brain, right? It was like, okay, this is different than what we're talking about before, which is, okay, this doesn't seem to work in me. This works in me. This doesn't work in him because he's whatever. This is the same people. So to me, that makes a big difference. So I think that is the time and range outcomes with the MiniMed 780 using these two sensors, right? Instinct or Simplera. It is okay, now I understand. So now I can say to someone, which one do you want? Which one is your insurance coverage better with in the United States, at least, because it's all about insurance here, right? How do we do this? What would you like? With more confidence in the end, with much more confidence.
Yeah. And in fact, not only that, but it seems that people switching from Guardian to either Simplera or to Instinct actually, in many cases, improve their time and range, which is probably related to more time and automation. Just because right. Guardian, it has its challenges, right, with the transmitter and charging it and sometimes dropping off early or having to tape it the right way. But there was this study done in Italy, or done out of the lead investigator was out of Italy, a prospective multi-center study across 14 centers. And this was adolescents with type 1 diabetes, but basically showed that when they switched from Guardian 4 to Simplera Sync, that their time in range actually increased from 76 to 79%. They had improvements in nighttime glucose without any increase in hypoglycemia. And then there was also data from Viral Shah, real world data, looking at people that basically were using the Instinct sensor. And specifically, he looked at an analysis of people that switched from Guardian 4 to Instinct, which was over 4,000 people. And he showed that they had higher time in range. They went from 75 to 77%. time in tight range actually increased from 49 to 53%. And he attributed the improvements to greater sensor use, which increased from 91 to 98%, and more time in automated mode, which went from 90% to 96%, which translates to 1.5 more hours per day. So I think, yeah, if this doesn't dispel the like, oh, it's just the sensor made it look like there was more time in range, I don't know what else does. Here you've got now three sensors all showing incredible time in range. And I think this really showcases it is the power of the algorithm. It is a very good algorithm for automating insulin delivery.
Absolutely. And, you know, this is the thing. If you know, we've all known the challenges with Guardian, and for that matter, MiniMed has started this whole relationship with Instinct, with Abbott, you know, the Instinct sensor by Abbott specifically because of this, right? There are some challenges with keeping Guardian up and running. You got to charge the thing. You got it right. Like there's just some nuances to it. So, you know, it's hard to be number one. They were the first one out with a continuous glucose sensor. It used to have a cord. We used to have to wear a plastic bag around our necks to take a shower. It was not fun. But guess what? We knew where our glucose was, or at least or where it was going, at least speed and direction of change, right? So the improvements, though, have been slower than we'd like. And now I would say that if someone's choosing to go on a MiniMed 780G, my choices in my practice are Instinct or Simplera, right? We're not using Guardian because Guardian struggles to keep you in automated mode. Once it's in, this MiniMed system is phenomenal. It's just keeping them in. Well, now this is the answer to that, right? Use a sensor that will keep them in that are now, by the way, available. So I think that this was, and you know, Viral Shah, Dr. Shah's data looked at, you know, almost 14,000 people. That's a lot, right? This is not just a little bit. This is a lot of people. And then Guardian to Instinct was another more than 4,300 people. So again, if you're looking at 138 of something, it's one thing. This is a lot of people using the pump, switching all by themselves and looking at the data and seeing the difference. To me, it's phenomenal.
Yeah, I totally agree. And then to kind of round out this episode, I know we're keeping you all a little bit longer than we usually do, but I think, you know, we've got to talk about Omnipod, and they're really working to closing the loop. And on the first day of the conference, they had basically a full, very full, beyond full
run of Peter. And kick people out. Right. Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Is showcasing their newest data of a fully closed loop for type 2 diabetes called the Evolution trial. And here it's small. They had 24 people, but all with type 2 diabetes and no bolusing, right? Just wearing the pump. And they showed that time in range increased to an average of 68%, which was a 24% improvement over their standard insulin therapy, which in most cases was MDI. And this was all done without bolusing. Also, time below range was very low, a median of 0.14% below 70. And now they're going to the Evolution 3 trial to continue to validate these. And almost everyone, 91% of participants, wanted to continue on to Evolution 3. Why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you?
I love the idea of this, right? And even the ADA guidelines have said, look, there are, if someone's on basal insulin and you're about to add mealtime insulin, consider AID for these people with type 2. So why? Because it works. So this is amazing. I mean, if I could offer this now in a, hey, what are we doing? Don't bolus at all. And sometimes we do end up with these people, right, already. That we're using the current algorithm and they start to bolus a little bit. They don't bolus some days. And it's still able to keep them more in range than they were ever able to do on their own on bringing that, you know. So I love this. I love the idea of it. I love the reduction in burden. You know, I love taking away that feeling of, oh, I have to do what? I'm so overwhelmed. No, just put it on, address alarms. Right? It's only going to work if your sensor's talking to the pump. Like there are some education
yeah, for sure.
things that you certainly have to do. This is not set it and forget it. because you must respond if there's an occlusion. You must respond if the sensor's not talking. You must, right? There are things that this person is going to have to be taught, right? But boy, did that take away a lot, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's much closer to set it and forget it than what we have now. And I think, you know, to be fair, I think some people may look at this and say, well, 68%, that's very good. And that was a huge improvement from their baseline. But don't we want 70% or more? And I think that that's fair. And I think that that's kind of where I see the conversation going of we want something. We want to know what people can do with the least effort is possible to get as close to 70%. But then if we can make these systems in a way where people could, if they want to, put forth some effort, like they could announce meals if they want to, and perhaps then they can increase their time and range. They can go to 80, maybe even 90%. But at least offering both options when someone's just feeling like burned out and like can't do another thing, to know that they can still get pretty close to 70% would be a very positive thing.
And I think you and I both start always with what? Which is, where did this person start?
Yeah.
You know? So these people on average, right, started at 44% in range.
Right. Which is common for someone with type 2 on MDI. I mean, that's unfortunately, that's the reality.
Absolutely. Right. So if we're starting at 44 and we get to 68 on average, that's a pretty big, you know, that's a pretty big uptick, right? It's like starting someone with an A1C of 14 and going, well, you're only at 9. I'm sorry, what? You started at 14. Congratulations. I bet you feel better. I bet you're less thirsty. I bet you're right. Like all the things, right? I think we need to remember where this started, and maybe there'll be a deeper dive into some of this, and maybe forever people are going to need to give some insulin with very, very large carbohydrate meals. You know, I call them celebratory or eating out meals in my notes, right? If you're having a celebration, if it's a birthday party, if you're going out to a restaurant, you have to take some insulin for those kinds of things, because those are walloping amounts of carbohydrate, right? And the systems can't keep up yet. So I would love to see more data on this, drilled down a little bit to see, you know, where the spikes happen. Could we just give dinner only, right? Most people, their biggest meal of the day is dinner, right? Those kinds of things where I love the idea of never touching it. I also think it's going to be really hard to create algorithms that will cover 125 grams of carbohydrate one day and, you know, 45 grams the next day, right? So the data was just, this is just 24 people, but the idea that they're even looking at this makes my heart just go, oh, right? The burden is where? Very low.
Well, and I was just, I was so impressed that they already have the data on the system with the people. They're further along than I had realized.
They thought, right, exactly. Yeah. You and I both were like, wow, yeah. Yep, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. So, yeah, it was an incredible conference. This is just like a small taste of all that we attended and learned about, but more to come soon. With that, we thank you for tuning in. And that wraps up this episode of Diabetes Dialogue, Technology, Therapeutics, and Real World Perspectives.
Thanks, everyone.